This show is powered by BL3P, the Lightning-enabled European Bitcoin exchange.
Connect the build.
Alex River, New York.
LiDAR, which stands for Light Detection and Ranging, is a remote sensing method that uses light in the form of a pulsed laser to measure variable distances to the Earth. LiDAR technology is widely used in various fields, including geography, geology, archaeology, forestry, urban planning, and civil engineering, among others. Are you as bullish on LiDAR as you are on Bitcoin?
No.
With a degree in aerospace engineering, have you ever drawn parallels between the principles of aerospace engineering and the dynamics of the Bitcoin network, perhaps envisioning Bitcoin as a spacecraft navigating to the financial universe?
Yes.
Is it true that you previously did voluntary work in Peru?
Yes.
Nespresso is a brand of coffee machines and coffee capsules owned by the Nestlé Group. It's known for its convenient single-serve coffee system, offering a wide variety of coffee flavors and intensities to suit different preferences. Do you drink more than 4 cups of coffee a day?
Yes.
Boxing is a combat sport that involves two opponents engaging in a contest of strength, speed, reflexes, and strategy with a roped-off square, a ring. The goal is to outscore or knock out the other opponent within a set of number of rounds. Do you also play boxing matches?
Yes.
Do you consider yourself a toxic maxi?
No.
Is it true that you speak Chinese?
No.
Do you envision a day when Bitcoin is not just seen as a store of value, but as the default currency for everyday transactions worldwide?
Yes.
Pollo Campero is a popular Latin American fast food restaurant chain specializing in fried chicken. The chain was founded in Guatemala in 1971 and has since expanded to various countries around the world, including the United States, Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Ecuador, Spain, and others. Is this your favorite restaurant?
Yes.
Are you Satoshi Nakamoto?
No.
Welcome to the Connect the World weekly podcast. I'm Edward.
And I'm Steph. We are ready to take you with us into the beautiful world of the Lightning Network.
Enjoy the ride. This is episode 103 of Connect the World. And this show is made possible by our friends from BL3P and Bringin. Thank you guys for helping us with our mission. And if you also want to help out, and of course you do, then follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or if you have any questions at all, then go to our Telegram group and you can ask us anything. And of course, a donation is always welcome.
Conecta el mundo.
Alex, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Those questions were difficult, right?
Yeah. It's like, I was trying to keep it to only yes and no.
That's great, because it tends to be difficult for a lot of guests. So you did great. Yeah.
Thanks.
But we have now time to elaborate on it, on some of the answers you gave. I saw, is it true that you speak Spanish? You said no, but you were doubting.
I think you asked Chinese.
Chinese.
Oh, Chinese. Yeah. Sorry. Chinese. Yeah, that's correct.
Well, I can get around basic and basics, but I wouldn't say I speak it. I think that's like a pretty high bar. My Spanish is a lot better.
Oh, really? You speak Spanish too?
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
Okay.
Awesome.
There was confusion. Why there was confusion in my head about Spanish? I didn't even speak Spanish, man. So,
I get around better. I'm still.
Okay, cool. But did you study Chinese or what was, yeah, what's the deal there?
I studied abroad in China my last semester of college. And so I never majored in the language or anything like that. So I just sort of like picked up the basics while I was there, and I studied it while I was there. I honestly, I just went to a country that was like the most different from where I grew up and important. And I was like, I knew nothing about China before I went there. And, you know, afterwards I could get around.
Yeah, so, cool. That's great. Yeah. That's great. And how come that you speak Spanish? Is it your roots or?
No, I mean, I think I just started learning Spanish as a kid because I grew up in an area that was very Hispanic in near the DC area. And so I think the first Spanish I learned was at recess in elementary school when like kids from like Guatemala and El Salvador were like playing soccer and they would always say like centro, derecho. And you had to learn what they were saying so you could play against them. And then I kind of just like picked it up from there, and I spent a lot of time in Latin America. So I have a lot of friends from Latin America. Yeah.
Cool.
Works. And did you also learn how to write and read in Spanish or only to talk it?
In Spanish? Oh, yeah. I mean, I can read and write it pretty well.
Okay.
Awesome. I mean, I wouldn't call myself fluent, but I get around pretty.
But that's great because it's a language that is spoken in a lot of countries. So it's very handy.
And the music is so good.
Pollo Campero.
Pollo Campero. I'm more on the they have also the grilled chicken. I like the grilled chicken actually better, the pollo la brasa better than the fried chicken. But I love it. I get it all the time. They have it in New York now. So
is this comparable to Kentucky Fried Chicken? Or is it totally different?
I'd say it's pretty different. I mean, it's definitely like the same. I don't know. I just don't put them together. KFC and Popeyes are like American fried chicken, which is very different.
Because we don't know that, Steph, here. We only have Kentucky fried chicken.
I saw it on your ex, by the way, Edward...
I was going to say, in El Salvador, Pollo Campero is like extremely popular. that's like the restaurant in El Salvador.
Yeah, that's it's funny that you say it, but I never heard of it. But I will definitely try it out when I'm in a neighbor that offers those kind of restaurants.
And is there a Pollo Campero restaurant where you can pay with Lightning or Bitcoin?
Must be in El Salvador.
In El Salvador, of course.
In El Salvador. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So that's on our list, Steph.
A good way to spend sets.
Yeah.
Hey, it is. You said it was true that you did voluntary work in Peru. Can you elaborate on that? What was the project you were working on?
That was so long ago. So that was the summer after my freshman year in college. I was in Engineers Without Borders, and we built a water sanitation system in a town outside of 3 hours away from Cusco, Peru. And in the mountains, a lot of the people spoke Quechua and Spanish. It was very fun. It was a very interesting experience. It was my first time, going to a developing country and just learning about, a place very different than where I grew up. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of things about sort of, doing development work and like who's really benefited from this? Why aren't they building their own water filtration systems? Like, kind of, it sort of opened these big questions in my head that, sent me down various rabbit holes. But overall, it was fun.
And by the time that you get to know Bitcoin, was there a link in the beginning immediately with the emerging markets where you did this kind of work that you thought like, well, this technology could really benefit those places or?
So I would say that, yes and no. I think like those early experiences sent me down the economics rabbit hole. That led to digging into Austrian economics and understanding monetary policy, asking these big fundamental questions of what is money. Yeah. And that is really what got me into what laid the foundation for me to understand Bitcoin. I actually wanted to build my own currency that the government can control. That's what I was sort of thinking about doing when I was actually in China. Those are the ideas I was working on. And then I discovered Bitcoin the next year and I was like, well, this is a solved problem.
Eureka. This is it.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, and you said you don't consider yourself as a toxic maxi, but when I hear you talking, I'm like, okay, maybe it's the word toxic that we need to step away from and just call you a maxi. Is that correct? Or
Yeah, yeah, because I'm thinking about a spacecraft navigating the financial universe. So that was a positive yes.
I think for all intents and purposes, I'm a Bitcoin maximalist. Like, obviously, my company is Bitcoin only. I really only deeply believe in Bitcoin. The reason I don't like the label is I just generally don't like dogma and sort of like tribalism along those lines too much, because I think it is sort of, it doesn't help foster a culture of clear thinking and asking hard questions and being able to just like purely focus on what is truth and what is real. So I do actually fundamentally believe like Bitcoin and Bitcoin alone is on a trajectory to become the reserve currency of the world. But I don't believe that you set it up for success by making it too much of a religion or cult. And so I do think there is value in having sort of a group, sort of an in-group thing where people love Bitcoin and they share these values. But I think sometimes people take it a little bit too far and it's counterproductive.
I'm thinking about one person that a friend of ours that went to Bitcoin Atlantis not so long ago said that, well, he obviously was there and saw all those Bitcoiners and said, well, they're all humble and all authentic and are trying to do good. Do you also agree that perhaps in the end, everybody that's working in the space now is that kind of person doing good and believing?
I do think generally that's true. I mean, people like the toxic label, I don't think really there are that many toxic people. There's actually very small number. I think sometimes people just use the term tongue in cheek. And I think by and large that is the case. And the sort of toxic, you know, behaviors, it often comes from having been scammed yourself, right? Or having seen other people get scammed with all the shit coins. And you know, I get it, right? But I think the thing I've learned is you can't force people to not shitcoin, right? Everyone just kinda has to go through it and do it and learn the hard way. I'm not convinced there are that many people that didn't play around with altcoins because somebody told them they shouldn't. I think they did it, and then they saw people saying they shouldn't, and then eventually went down that rabbit hole. But everyone kind of learns the hard way.
Yeah. Correct, man.
I think that's true.
Cool. We prepared a lot of questions about River and your vision on the Lightning Network, Alex. But it has to be in the 21 minutes. So if you're ready, we would really love to enter that part.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Come on.
The 21 minutes is brought to you by Bringin, the app to reliably sell and spend Bitcoin from any wallet. Well, let's start with River. Because with River, you focus on empowering long-term Bitcoin investors, amongst a lot of other things. But aside from that, River is also extensively involved within the Lightning Network. And we were wondering at first, what makes the Lightning Network so interesting for River?
So the most interesting thing about the Lightning Network is that it is one of the big enabling technologies for Bitcoin to transition as a medium of exchange someday. And so it's very early still in that transition. And I don't think it's actually happening anytime soon. But the technological foundation is started with the Lightning Network. And we made a decision we wanted to be involved in that early on. Because we're a Bitcoin-only company, we have the ability to do some of these hard things that, you know, if we were running a multi-coin exchange, we would be busy with dealing with dozens of different blockchains and all of the complexity that comes with that. Because we're Bitcoin-only, we can focus on making some very long-term bets and investing in this sort of technology. And so we're one of the biggest nodes on the Lightning Network today. We process, you know, a lot of volume for the Lightning Network, and we've learned a lot. I think the Lightning Network has a bunch of potential, but it's also not a silver bullet. And so it's not like the Lightning Network is by no means a huge revenue generator for River. Our brokerage business is really the main business, but it does bring something to our product that that a lot of our competitors don't have.
And what are the main challenges you currently see with Lightning payments, and how are you addressing them to improve the user experience and reliability? And are you also in actively in contact with all the implementation guys, so CLN and Lightning Lab, for instance?
Yeah, so we are in contact with lots of folks. I mean, the Lightning Network is very human, right? Actually, all these nodes at the end of the day are run by people. So you often find yourself just messaging somebody being like, hey, you know, our channels aren't opening with you. What's going on? We run LND. It's really sort of the easiest, you know, nodes to run, most battle tested. But I think all of the implementations are very interesting, and I'm glad that people are working hard on LDK and C-Lightning and those kinds of things, and there's a lot of promise. I would break down the challenges with the Lightning Network into two categories. There's self-custodial consumer Lightning and then custodial Lightning. Self-custodial Lightning is a very, very challenging technological and economic problem. And I don't think we're close to having that near mass market, mass adoption. I think there are too many technical problems left to solve, and we're a ways off. The capital lockups are a challenge. Just dealing with on-chain fees and making the prices for routing payments to these wallets economically viable for some sort of wallet operator, it's a tough challenge. And so what I'm mostly interested in is the Lightning Network as a connector of the existing sort of custodial wallets. And I don't actually believe that runs counter to the self-custody ethos of Bitcoin. I think Lightning is for small transactions. It's for your spending money. It's not for sending large payments with your entire net worth, right? Do that on chain and self-custody on chain. The Lightning Network is a great connector for all the custodial wallets to facilitate smaller transactions between them. And it is actually becoming an increasingly really good UX, especially as Lightning addresses get adopted more and people just get more comfortable running this infrastructure. It does still have challenges, right? You still have to keep, if you're running a node, you have to keep a lot of funds hot. You have to do channel management. Automating all of that isn't the easiest thing in the world. You also have a lot of different failure modes with payments that you don't on-chain, right? With on-chain, it's either like, you know, broadcast or confirmed, right? Like, it's sort of a simple thing. With Lightning, there's like, the transaction is stuck and the user's asking where their money is. And well, we don't know when it'll be unlocked. And it's like, but those are getting, you know, more and more solved. So that's my take.
Yeah, that's right.
And do you run a node yourself personally or just a company node?
Not anymore. I used to run nodes myself. But I mean, the company keeps me busy enough. So I just don't feel any need to run a personal node.
No.
I just use the River app, and that's, you know, basically me running a node in a way.
that's right. It's interesting what you say, because on the other side, there are so many people working on making the Lightning Network better. And there are also, for example, I wrote an article not so long ago about version 3 transactions, making it more detachable, the on-chain and Lightning transaction, to have it more deterministic, so you know what the fees are going to be. And that's, of course, very interesting. And liquidity, well, that's a problem for starters. And there are so many things that that I think in the upcoming 1 or 2 years are going to be solved. So let's see if that works on the adoption side also. And I was wondering, how does River measure the growth and health of the Lightning Network? Because, metrics are only publicly seen, of course. What metrics or indicators do you believe are the most important to understand the development?
Yeah, so public metrics are tough to really effectively measure the health of the Lightning Network. So we typically rely on proprietary data, and that's our own node routing data that we have access to, and also partners of ours who we'll connect with and just ask for their data. And while that's definitely not representative of the entire Lightning Network, it does give us a good ability to extrapolate trends. Yeah. And that's what we use to generate the reports, the annual reports that we put out. So, you know, that's actually like a pro and a con of the Lightning Network. Is it's so private that you actually can't really tell what's going on with it unless you ask a node operator to give them your data. Give you the idea.
You've mentioned in another interview an interest in providing lighting infrastructure services in a non-custodial fashion, which will be great, of course. Can you share more about the technologies and approaches you're exploring to make this a reality?
Yeah, so we were exploring a project there. We've since paused the development on that. So it's not something we're working on anymore. But we did have some pretty cool tech we were building out. There was so much happening at River and things were growing so quickly. We had to kind of pick and choose where we put our time and resources. And we were also seeing companies like Voltage and Lightspark just really nailing it on the non-custodial side of things. And, we're just like, you know, they're doing a really good job. We're going to focus our resources on more of the core business.
Yeah. And well, we were just talking a little bit about possible solutions to make the Lightning Network better. The concept of resizing, for example, Lightning channels holds the key to enhance not just user experience, but also back-end liquidity dynamics. And not so long ago, we also talked with Dusty Demon, the developer behind splicing technology. How do you anticipate splicing will impact user experience for both individual and also enterprise customers of Lightning services?
It definitely simplifies the node management, whether you're a self-custody consumer with just a mobile node and you just need to add more funds to your channel or get them out. Yeah. It's a much simpler thing to reason about. And same thing for running a big routing node. You can, you know, if you get a lot of, you know, if your channel starts to get too many funds hot, right, you can just splice out a channel instead of closing it. It does add complexity to the protocol itself, right? This feature isn't free. It does make the protocol, the Lightning protocol, more complex. But assuming all of it works and it can be properly abstracted away, it does make the life easier for node operators.
And how significant is, in your opinion, splicing in accelerating the adoption of the Lightning Network? Do you also think it will attract new users?
I think all of this stuff is definitely valuable and will compound the value of the Lightning Network. I think by far the biggest challenge to Lightning today is, getting Lightning implemented in all of the wallets, the biggest challenge is product and UX and for example, let's say Coinbase wants to add Lightning, which they've announced that they're working on. Well, put yourself in the shoes of the product manager at Coinbase doing this, right? There's a lot to coordinate, like educating the designers on how this should work. Like, this is not a blockchain. You're used to adding blockchains. Okay, this is something entirely different. How do you handle all of this in the user experience? Now sending Bitcoin has like two ways to do it. This unlocks a whole new sort of complexity for both the operations, the app. So I think that stuff is actually the biggest like blocker for Lightning. But all this other stuff, of course, makes Lightning more robust.
Yeah, if you say it like this, then it's really difficult to put a change on in your product landscape. So yeah. Let's talk about another development, for example, Taproot Assets and their potential integration in the Lightning Network. What opportunities do you see for enhancing financial services on Lightning? And how might River leverage Taproot Assets to offer new or improved services?
So Taproot Assets is an interesting protocol because it allows liquid tokens to transfer both on-chain and on the Lightning Network. And the main focus there is bringing stablecoins to Lightning.
Yeah.
Now, the thinking behind all of this is Bitcoin does not have product market fit yet as a medium of exchange. And it is quite far from having that. In fact, Bitcoin won't be widely used as a medium of exchange until the dollar fails or collapses or other like large parts of the global economy start to try to break away from the dollar, right? The dollar is just what everyone wants. And that's just reality. So, okay. Can we bridge this gap between today and Bitcoin being this, you know, the mainstream transactional currency and bring dollars to Bitcoin and, you know, solve people's needs and pull them closer to Bitcoin? And so the idea here is, well, let's bring dollars to the Lightning Network. And because stablecoins are extremely popular today, and stablecoins are, extremely popular because dollars are popular. People just want dollars, and stablecoins is the easiest way to get dollars in many parts of the world today. So if the stablecoins come to the Lightning Network, will this be an even cheaper, faster way to send dollars around the world? And that's the general thinking behind it. And so insofar as River adds stablecoin support, that's sort of because we're based in the US, our clients are actually the least find stablecoins the least compelling, like out of everyone, because all of our customers, all of our clients have bank accounts with dollars. And so there might be a world where we add that someday, but I think it's going to be most compelling outside of the US and outside of the Western developed world.
Yeah. And but because how do you envision these advancements impacting the global adoption of the Lightning Network, especially in regions with volatile currencies? I can imagine that in those regions it will be, a great advance, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the sort of like decision tree or sort of like logic tree is if stablecoins or dollars on Lightning is more compelling from a user experience perspective than stablecoins on Polygon or Tron or some of these other like fast, cheap blockchains, then that will substantially increase the adoption of the Lightning Network, and it will be good for Bitcoin. And so that's the logic behind it.
But
definitely open questions.
Yeah, that's right. And I also think, maybe there are some regulatory challenges there. If that's the case, I don't know. Yeah. And given River's emphasis on security and trust as central to your mission, what specific measures and technologies does River employ to safeguard client investments and ensure privacy, for example?
Yeah. So we have a lot of layers to this, right? The first is obviously sort of this segregating Bitcoin between hot and cold. And the way that we operate is actually River owns a decent amount of Bitcoin ourselves as a company. And so we're still at a scale where we're able to keep 100% of client balances cold, and the hot wallet and Lightning nodes are just our own Bitcoin. And so that means that even if there was a hack, even if our servers got compromised, the total compromise of online systems, the Bitcoin wouldn't be able to be touched by the hacker. And so that is like the first, like that is like the biggest layer of defense. It's just this air gap, right? And then of course, like in our software systems that we do have online, there's lots of layers of defense. Just having an internal culture of security. We do a lot of pen testing. We do a lot of infrastructure review. Really at the end of the day, like the core focuses I have is on generating an internal culture of security, right? The security culture is like, it was what do you do when no one's watching, right? And so that's a huge focus of ours. It's just like rule number one is don't mess up. Don't get hacked. Don't let anything happen to our systems. If that means we're going to build fewer features because we have to focus more on security projects, then that's fine. And so that's how we think about it.
And I saw you also provide like multi-sig wallets is this something that you provide for the customer side, or is it something you guys do at the background?
It's behind the scenes. So the cold storage that I was describing, that is a multi-sig internal.
That's a multi-sig. Okay. We are a Lightning focused podcast, and you guys are operating one of the world's largest Lightning nodes. What strategies do you employ to manage its node effectively, especially in terms of balancing liquidity and ensuring transaction rate success? Because that's obviously one of the most important things when running a Lightning node, and one of the most challenging things also.
It's definitely an art. We don't have it down to a science yet. It's still very much an art because the Lightning Network is so human. And we've made some mistakes, right? So we're balancing a number of things. We're balancing how many funds are hot on the Lightning node. We want to keep that number as low as possible. We're also balancing reliability. So we have two routing nodes instead of one, which means that our hot funds is actually higher. And then it's sort of like, well, how many channels and who do we peer with, right? And selecting that and then managing those channels. So it's all these sort of different things that we're optimizing. And sometimes we'll make a data-driven decision like, these channels aren't useful to us. They're putting funds hot. We should close them. It's not capital efficient. But then we close someone's channel that actually is like, they're kind of upset. And they're like, a friend or, you know, their friendly peer. And it's like, well, why did you close my channel? And so it's still very human and very like relationship too. So, we basically just have general risk thresholds. Like the biggest one is like, here's our success rate, like, you know, target, and here's our funds hot cap, right? And so we basically set that, and then I tell the team like operate within these thresholds, and you know, get the job done.
It's very interesting to see on Emboss the increase and decrease of the liquidity. I was watching it today again, and it's just crazy to see.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, well, we don't need all of this liquidity to drop payments, right? And so one of the things that we underestimated it originally, and we still to some degree underestimate, is just like public communications around changes. Every time we make a big change, we try to announce it ahead of time, but you know, sometimes people are like, well, what happened? Why did you close my channel? And it's like, you know, it's like, well, and also it's like we've channels with people and I'm like, I don't know how to contact you. You know,
no, that's
to ask you. Like it's not like it's not like I have a signal thread with you. So it's challenging sometimes.
You can key send messages, obviously, but it's not like a real text service.
Spamming. Hey, and can you elaborate on how you use private channels within the River Lightning nodes and the impact of these channels on overall health and privacy on the network?
Yeah, so we have some private channels with peers. Then we also have private channels with internal nodes. So the way our architecture works is we actually have four nodes, two public routing nodes, and then two private internal nodes. And so the reason we do that, it was an architectural decision based off of advice from other node operators when we first got things spun up, which is to have the invoice generation and the routing on different nodes so that you're not sort of hammering both databases and flooding. You don't have one node responsible for everything. And so that's how we operate. And then we have two of each for redundancy.
Yeah.
Cool. And looking towards the future, how do you envision the Lightning Network evolving? And what role will River play in shaping the landscape of Bitcoin-based financial services? And well, yeah, it doesn't only touch on the Lightning Network, obviously.
So I think the Lightning Network is going to continue to see the big players come on board. Right, I think the Coinbases and the other exchanges, at the end of the day, I think everyone will have Lightning. From there, it's TBD. I think I don't know how it goes from there. Maybe people figure out how to keep improving the self-custody Lightning situation. I mean, I really like Moon, Phoenix. I mean, all these guys are very, very smart and have some cool ideas. So let's see what they come up with. I would love to see that happen. And then I do think Taproot Assets is potentially a big deal. That's really just like there's just a few like unknown sort of dates there. It's like, well, the tech can be ready, but like, has somebody issued the stablecoin, right? And so I'm excited about it. I just don't know when it's going to happen.
It's interesting because you just said almost the same as Graham Kreitzek from Voltage. He said,
well, he's a smart guy.
Yeah, he is really. Every company will become a Lightning company. And also Andrew Baggin from Blink and Galois said that, building an open source programmable money, it's hard to imagine all of the use cases that are enabled on top of Lightning infrastructure. The only way I can think about, he said, is that every service in the world will either become Lightning enabled or they will be disrupted by a service that is. What's your thought on this about Lightning becoming an infrastructure of the future? Because we need it for global adoption of Bitcoin?
We don't need Lightning for global adoption of Bitcoin as a store of value. We need it for global adoption as a medium of exchange. My view is maybe a little bit different than some others. I think Bitcoin as a medium of exchange will certainly enable businesses that couldn't exist in the fiat world. However, I do think that most businesses are agnostic to payment system. If Lightning and Bitcoin becomes the main payment system, they'll just switch to that. And so, it's kind of like saying every company is a dollar company. Yes. That's not the secret sauce.
No,
that's correct.
It is.
Hey, and Alex, are you? We just heard today that Bitcoin Amsterdam is planned on 9th and 10th of October this year. Are you planning to attend that conference? Because we had Sam Wouters on last time, but are you also attending this year?
So I'm pretty sure Sam will be there. I don't know yet. It's been years since I've been in Amsterdam, so maybe I will.
Of course. Been years. I mean, you know, that's a great city, right? So
it is.
I would really love to have a beer with you, man. If you're here in Amsterdam,
a lot of Bitcoin is here. So
I would love to come.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool, man.
Great.
Okay, we ran out of time, unfortunately, yeah. Edward.
We did, and we had some extra questions, but let's follow all the things that are happening and all the progression that is made, and some other time we would love to have you back on the show. All right, let's continue. Conectado Lumia.
Yeah, luckily we have one question left from you, Alex, and you may choose yourself. We have a question prepared from Brandon Green. He is from BTC Inc. Dusty Demon, well, we already talked about his splicing project. And Michael Fisher, he's for Opago. Which one will it be?
BTC Inc.
BTC Inc. BTC Brandon Inc. Green.
All right.
Hi, I'm Brandon from BTC Inc. And my question is, what is the smallest possible Lightning channel you can have?
Oh, interesting. This is like a trivia question.
I think it is. Yeah.
Small, man.
And to help you, we don't know the answer. So
no.
we can't say right or wrong. So,
well, assuming your peer cooperates, it would be like whatever the minimum sort of like protocol numbers are for how much you have to have locked up. I don't know the number. I would guess it's around 10,000 sats.
Now, this is interesting, like Steph. We can ask this question to a lot of more guests and then do a test.
Let's see.
That's interesting.
Yeah, let's find out who's correct.
10,000 sets then.
And let me ask you another question. What is the smallest amount nowadays of that you recommend for people to open a new channel?
Smallest amount a day.
A smallest amount today. So with the current state of the network,
It obviously depends on your own sort of operation. I mean, if you're running a routing node, I wouldn't open a channel smaller than half a Bitcoin, maybe 0.25 Bitcoin. Obviously our scale is a bit different, right?
Of course.
Running a personal node, I don't know. I wouldn't open one smaller than 0.25 Bitcoin, and I would just target it at like a really good destination and pick. Like if you're working with a small amount of coins, I think pick your peers wisely.
It depends. Indeed, because with our Rings of Fire project, we always say, it began with 500,000 sets.
But it's just to play around, right?
Yeah,
it's just to get to know.
To learn it.
Exactly. Right. So.
And then elevated to 1 million. But we had also one for half a Bitcoin, right, Steph?
Yeah, that's correct.
That was a really big one.
We will adjust the statement now and then say that Alex is recommending opening a channel from 0.25 Bitcoin from now on. So,
okay, let's
open
the Ring of Fire.
We only attract whales to the Rings of Fire community from now on. No, cool.
So great. All right.
Alex, thanks for the talk again, man.
Yeah, thanks again.
Where can people follow you?
And River.
Yeah, we always say, can you shield your Twitter account? But it's like, it's X nowadays.
Yeah,
we need to
now.
Adjust it in the script too.
I mean,
Edward, you also say in the beginning that you can follow us on Twitter,
that's
but
right.
It's X nowadays. So where can people follow you, Alex?
Yeah, so River is easy, at River on Twitter, just the normal spelling of the word. And then I'm at Leishman, my last name, Leishman, on X.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah. And thanks for everybody else to listen to our episode. And thanks for all members participating in the Satoshi Radio Rings of Fire. And of course, thanks to everyone helping to connect the world with us. So if you like our content, then please support us in our mission. Visit our website, connecttheworld.live, where you can also donate and subscribe, like, and share our content on your favorite platform. We need you to complete our mission. So keep those notes running, sets flowing, and rings burning. And see you all next week on the same lightning channel. Namaste, Alex.
Adios, Alex.
Adios.